Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, PAX 2009, Day 2.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George.
I'm Scott Juster.
My last name is Albor, in case you were wondering. Anyway, this is day two of PAX. We just went ahead and spent the...
A little punchy.
As you all know, we created experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And as you've noticed, yesterday we did day one of PAX Roundup, so we're doing it again. And today was a pretty exciting day. Day two, I think, was fun. It was cool.
Yeah, we're going strong.
We're still got the energy.
Keeping our momentum.
So let's just bust right in there. Okay. Let's knock down the door of some of the cool panels we saw today.
Door number one.
The first panel we saw was a personal favorite of ours, too, and that was the Totally Rad Show. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you listeners ever see the show. It's done by Jeff Cannata, Alex Albrecht, and Dan Trachtenberg. Mm-hmm. It's a video podcast where they review movies, sometimes comic books, video games, board games,
basically anything that they define as rad is fair game.
And most of the time that runs along the geeky spectrum.
Yeah.
So for geeks, it's a really fantastic endeavor. Mm-hmm. There's not really much to say about that other than it was just really cool to see them do their thing. They're all talented guys, you know?
They all talked about their favorite video games. They took a lot of questions from the audience. And it was just cool. We got a couple sneak peeks at some super secret things that they told us not to talk about.
Yeah, which we won't.
So we'll just tease it.
Ooh.
But we do recommend the show, and I guess that's pretty much all we have to say about it. I mean, we both are fans of it, and it's something that I think everyone should take a look at.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to repeat something that Jeff said, and it was just this sense of camaraderie that I think PAX builds up, and it being something that's somewhat even less about the video games and more about the players.
Yeah.
And I think the panels are indicative of that, particularly the TRS panel, because, you know, these are guys who spend a lot of time doing their own thing. They're not necessarily involved with development. They all have their own day jobs.
Exactly.
But it's cool to see them come back to the community, come to something like the PAX, and
you get the sense that if they weren't on the panel, they would be in the audience.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just as excited about all of these subjects as you are. And I think it makes you feel a little bit less crazy to know that things like this exist, you know?
Okay, next panel. Which one should we talk about?
Well, the next one we went to was the Girls in Gaming.
Oh, yeah, Girls in Gaming panel. We didn't see all of this panel because, you know, the lines are crazy to get into it, to get into all the panels, really. But it was just kind of a broad overview about how women are doing in the gaming industry and in the gaming genre in general.
Yeah. And they covered a lot of the... I think they covered a lot of the important and... at least maybe not well-known, but important aspects of women in gaming. That's, you know, not only how they're represented in games, but how people think that they should be represented in games, and how a female presence in the... although a female president would be great, too. How a female presence in the industry is lacking, and at the same time, the forces who are there maybe aren't being as effective as they otherwise would be if there were a little bit more respect for... females in game design.
I mean, it's basically the message is really about diversity in the way that everything from how women are depicted in games runs to how women fit into development teams and making sure that there is gender equality in the workplace as well. Because the industry is one side of things, and the art form is kind of another side of things. They both influence each other because they kind of attract a certain type of people. And so if you can kind of create norms to make things friendly for all folks, regardless of gender, you know, it's just a healthier environment, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And hats off to the panelists, by the way. Oh, the panelists were Jeff Kiles from Penny Arcade.
He was the moderator.
He's a moderator. Yeah. Annie Vandermeer Carlson, she's a freelance game designer. Deirdre Kai from Hothead Games. And Sandra Liu, who's a marketing manager for Foundation 9. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do, but...
Cindy Armstrong was also there. She's the CEO of Web Wars. Senta Jacobson... what is the chief operating officer of EA DICE Sweden, which was really interesting. I wish she had been able to talk a little bit more, because she's one of the few people that works in a huge gaming corporation. Yeah. Most of these other people are either self-employed or on a very small team. Like Deirdre, her team at Hothead is 30. She talks about it getting bigger, but, you know, 30 people, I'm assuming, is much smaller than EA.
Yeah, and the responsibility she has on her shoulders is really big.
So it's interesting to see the breadth that they had at that panel. There's just too much to really get into. You know, you only have an hour or whatever to do this, and so it's hard to spend an equitable amount of time on each person. So
yeah,
it's nice that they have this panel. It sounded like they had this last year. I wasn't there, so we weren't there last year, so we didn't know. But they talked about continuing to have this panel because it keeps on bringing these issues up, so people just don't sweep them under the rug.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think, at least personally, the theme for today's PAX events in general is that sense of a representation of the community and what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think it was really cool not only seeing, you know, how many men decided to wake up relatively early and attend this panel, but also, you know, there was a lot of women in that panel. And I think you see that there's a lot of people still interested in even not breaking into the industry necessarily, but just what it means and what gender means in it. So
yeah, it's nice to see interest, even if they're not directly in the industry or creating the games, because, you know, it keeps these issues in people's minds.
Exactly.
Okay, so next panel we should talk about was a big one. It seemed longer than the other ones, but it definitely had a pretty star-studded lineup. It was The Message is in the Medium, Why Story Matters in Games, and it had Adam Sessler was the moderator.
By the way, he was a great moderator.
Yeah, he was probably the best moderator we've had so far.
I agree.
I guess the TV trains people to to be performers.
I'm a big fan of Adam Sessler. We've actually talked about one of his Left 4 Dead rants, and I don't watch G4. I don't know anyone who does, but he's a good guy. So.
Well, maybe we should. Yeah. So anyway, here's the lineup. Dennis Dyack from Silicon Knights, Joseph Staten, he's Bungie's creative director, Tim Schafer of Double Fine, most recently he's releasing Brutal Legend, and Greg Zeschuk, he's the group creative officer and RPG MMO for the RPG MMO group of EA, and he's a co-founder of BioWare.
Well, huge.
So definitely a busy guy.
All of those guys are big names.
Yeah.
All of them are right now even working on big name titles that are coming out soon, except for, I don't know if Dyack is working on
it. Well, Dyack's last game was huge. Not necessarily a huge success, but it was too human, you know?
Too human.
And that guy always swings for the fences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you swing for the fences, sometimes you strike out in a big way, but other times you hit it out of the park with Eternal Darkness. Yeah. And so they were able to talk with him a lot about how they created the story for that game. And what his thoughts are on cutscenes versus in-game storytelling versus breaking the fourth wall type storytelling, which he did a lot of in Eternal Darkness.
All of the cutscene stuff that they talked about I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's somewhat connected to the story panels we saw yesterday
because
they did praise environmental design and stories being told through the environment. And I thought that was really cool. But at the same time, they didn't shun cutscenes. They didn't shun that authored narrative. The BioWare fellow,
Greg,
he was particularly, had a good point that, you know, cutscenes are a form of, they're just a tool, right? Mm-hmm. It's a way that allows pacing. And he mentioned that cutscenes are not the only thing that breaks immersion. That there's a lot of different, you know, be it ludonarrative dissonance or maybe some of the feats that the player is doing.
Mm-hmm. Or poor voice acting or poor sound design or something could break it just as well, as easily as a bad cutscene.
Exactly. Or even poor pacing.
Yeah.
Which means that there are times where, you know, maybe an authored bit of cutscene or even an authored bit of in-game, tunneling of the player through a certain pathway is best just for pacing wise and is actually works towards immersion, if for no other reason than canceling out some of the other anti-immersion, you know, problems that arise.
They also talked about how one keeps track of the story in something like BioWare's instance. They have all their games have these massive dialogue trees and how they figure out what they're doing and how they organize all of this. He didn't go into this, unfortunately, but he started talking about like a software way that they keep track of dialogue trees. And that sounds fascinating, because he said they once printed out all of the dialogue from Mass Effect, and it was like a 12-pound stack of paper or something
That's crazy.
And so there's a way that they have to manage this story and manage how the player navigates the story in such a way that they can still remember what's going on at all times. And as games get more and more involved with storytelling, if the author still wants control of that story, that's the way it's going to go.
You mean that technical, like having the tools?
Exactly, because if you don't do it, then you're taking another route, more like the Bungie route. God, what was his name? Sorry.
I believe his name was Joseph Stern.
Okay, Joseph. Oh, yeah. So when Joseph was talking from Bungie about what is a story in a game, he talked about Pong having a story, because it's about you talking trash with your brother when you beat him in Pong, just as Halo has a different story when you're playing it online. And so you either take the route of making a story through player-driven actions or co-op, multiplayer, things like that, or if you want to retain control as the author, you have to be ready to just slog through this massive amount of story material that you're going to have.
Although, I mean, the difference between the two forms of storytelling is absolutely important, and I don't think that one is necessarily better than the other. That being said, I liked that the guy from Bungie specifically mentioned the types of stories that arise when a certain cool thing in the game happens. Mm-hmm. And he admits that that's what they're aiming for in Bungie. And if you want more than that, there is the lore available through books and through comics and through just the imagination of players who help contribute to the overall universe.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, as a person who's played all of the Halo games, and I'm looking forward to ODST, I think they actually do a pretty good job of telling a good story.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that really impressed me about Joseph and Bungie's presentation was they were talking about when they released Halo 1, and it was just a couple weeks after 9/11, and he theorized that one of the reasons why Halo got an M was because it was just a couple weeks after 9/11. People were very touchy about violence. I mean, Halo is basically a story about an invading religiously zealous force.
Yeah, they're alien fanatics.
Yeah, it's called the Covenant. I mean, you know, and so it really was heartening to hear him talk about his game in a broader societal context.
And the fact that they're constantly thinking about that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that we forget, even with games that tend to be overtly offensive, is that there are still members of the team who are keeping these things in mind. Mm-hmm. And it's something we might not pick up on, you know? Like, he mentioned some of the choices in terms of the colors of the enemies was even a conscious choice, because they didn't want to affiliate their enemies with maybe some of the real world, not enemies, but quote-unquote enemies that we see arise.
Mm-hmm.
So, I also thought it was really cool that Greg talked about moral choices. I think someone in the question and answers said that too often in morality we get a situation where we either save the princess or kick a puppy.
Yeah.
It's like one good or the other. Yeah. And Greg was talking about one of the decisions that they do on Dragon Age Origins is to break that up and get rid of that morality system and make it almost more like the World of Warcraft's faction, right? Mm-hmm. Where you'll have a couple of guys who are kind of the goody-two-shoe guys, so if you do something against what they would do, they'll dislike you and there'll be repercussions. But there's not a third-party moral choice.
And it's also that gets rid of, and this is what I think they're doing with Dragon Age, right? They're getting rid of a morality meter. Like, you'll never get like a percentage. You are 77% good, you know, all that type of stuff. You'll only be able, like, really, like any kind of moral system, it is judged by how society and others judge you. I mean, morality is all relative, and so it's cool to see them taking that into consideration, you know, morality being relative rather than being an absolute percentage, you know, rather than being a mathematical, well, I mean, it's, of course, it's a mathematical construct because it's a video game, but it's not outwardly so.
Yeah. Which, it's funny. Well, two things. One, I think that the future of morality in video games is going to have to go this path, this faction path, just because everything else tends to be too simplistic.
Yeah.
Secondly, that is a big deal. To say that morality is relative in a video game, there are a lot of people who play video games who might be really religious, or even people who have a firm... Like, ethics and morality is really interesting to me, and it's something that I've studied in the past.
Yeah.
And it is ballsy to say in your game that morality is relative, to say that you can do things and go unpunished and not have a sense of guilt.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing with video games, is imbuing a sense of guilt into a character that is only given meaning through you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't feel guilt for what you do in the game, how is your character supposed to feel it without making it feel like an authored narrative that has a third-party judger?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very. Yeah, it was a really good panel. I mean, they touched upon a bunch of different things. I mean, you know, Dennis Dyack talked about Legacy of Kain. He talked about how he created the story for Eternal Darkness. He talked about how they came up with the Norse stuff for Too Human. Tim Schafer talked about all of his old games, like where he got the idea of Psychonauts.
Also, very funny guy.
Yeah, he was a clever guy. Where Brutal Legend came from. It's just interesting to hear creative people talk about what inspires them and their process of iterating on ideas that they may have had baking for years and finally are now getting a chance to kind of mold into something that they never expected it to be.
Yeah.
Very good panel. Excellent. So the last panel that we went to?
Yeah.
The last panel we went to was supposed to be sex and video games, how video games and have represented sex.
Yeah, historically and also comparatively with, I believe, Japanese video games.
Yeah, cultural differences between Japanese games' portrayal of sexuality and American games' portrayal of sexuality. Where do we want to go with this thing, man?
It's hard because this panel was, as Scott and I thought, it was a lost opportunity because the topic of sexuality is really interesting, and you could tell the line was huge for this panel.
I thought wasn't going to get in.
Yeah, people got turned away.
Yeah,
and it's just a shame because a lot of things went wrong in the panel, and I don't want to nitpick about some of the things that they did or did not do, but suffice it to say, a huge percentage of the audience did not have a good time.
Yeah.
We left actually a little bit early, and a lot of people left. I think towards the end, about 70% of the people ended up leaving before the panel actually ended.
Yeah.
And
it was really rough. Some of it, here's the thing. Some of it is real world things that just shit happens.
Yeah, like, tech stuff.
Like, the tech was bad. Like, PowerPoint was crashing. The room was not set up well. They tried to do some interactive thing at the beginning, and since the room is flat, just rows of chairs, anyone that's not in the first quarter of the room can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent like 20 minutes on it. And then they kind of had a haphazard timeline of sex in video games. They started off okay. Like, they started off with the earliest, like, text-based stuff.
And Custer's Revenge.
Yeah. Again, they... here's the thing here's the thing where their actual content was a little bit lacking. There were no years connected to anything. They never gave a year. You can't have history without years. Yeah. Like, it's just not something that you do.
Well, and even a sense of what's going on chronologically and how they affect each other.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a difference between saying this game came out a long time ago and people were upset about it, and then to actually put that into context, talk about why. You know, and there was quite a few years that they jumped over. I think they went almost from Custer's Revenge to Hot Coffee, Grand Theft Auto, which is, you know, quite a bit of ways in the future, and then again to Mass Effect 2.
Which skips over The Sims had sex in it. It skips over God of War, which had sex in it. I mean, it skips over... it just skipped over a lot of things that... a lot of games that a lot of people played. Yeah. And if you're going to do a history of something, you actually have to take into account the things that might not have been headlines, but still were very formative.
Yeah.
And then they tried to do stuff with Japan. They showed this really long and actually dated video. We had seen this documentary like 5 years ago.
Oh, and you and I, over 5 years
ago. Yeah, we had seen this documentary over 5 years ago, and at that time, it was already a couple years old, about just Japanese folks' general attitudes and practices about sex. It wasn't very contextualized within the talk, and again, there were tech problems with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that being said, I'm glad that they tried to do something like a panel like this. I think it's very indicative of the subject being interesting to players.
Yeah.
And that it's something that people, it's not, because I don't think it's just something where, oh, the word sex is in it and I want to go because, you know, yeah, sex is awesome. I think there's a lot of people who went there really hoping that they'd learn something about how sexuality in the United States affects mm-hmm. our art form.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't get that, I think, is also indicative of a general, one, not having a history of this discussion in the medium,
mm-hmm.
And two, not really having the type of vernacular in this context to discuss it properly.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to talk about sexuality in games because a lot of the times it's optional. A lot of the times, it's not particularly daring. Something like The Sims does depict sexuality, even though there's no actual sex involved.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's something that's hard to talk about. And the fact that there's so much interest now, but we still don't have a good grasp on how to discuss it, mm-hmm. I think it's a shame. But I'm glad that interest is there.
It's one of those things where like the Girls in Games panel, I hope exists every year because it needs to be refined. Like you're right. Like there's no good critical vocabulary for it right now. There's no good methodology for it. Like you got to be able to organize things. You have to be able to organize the facts of history first before you start talking about this. And you know, like people like talking about sex. Humans love sex. Like not only is it titillating and exciting, it's also fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a shame. It was a missed opportunity. Yeah. But let's go on to happier subjects. We spent time watching the Omeganauts today.
So for people who've never been to PAX or heard about PAX before, every year at PAX, they do this huge event.
Yeah.
It's a gaming competition,
yeah,
where they take members of PAX at random, at least partially at random.
Yeah.
I believe the people who participated last year get a chance. Yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada.
There's like a rematch system, yeah, or whatever.
Regardless.
Yeah.
They take people at random and put them through a gauntlet of video games to play. And there's just constant eliminations.
Yeah.
And it gets really stressful.
Yeah.
One year I saw a Jenga tournament.
Yeah.
And this is a sight to behold. A room with, you know, over 500 people,
yeah,
watching one game of Jenga. And every time the block is about to get pushed out, a hush falls over the,
yeah,
crowd. And then loud cheers.
Yeah.
And it blows your mind.
Yeah.
And so today, we were lucky enough to see not only the Omeganauts,
mm-hmm,
which is what they're called, the Omeganauts participate in a team-based combat, but they were also doing it on Halo 3 ODST,
yeah,
a new
As of yet unreleased Halo game.
Yeah. And they were playing a survival, essentially. They were playing a horde mode.
Yeah, so basically the computer sends waves of enemies at them and they work as a team to try to survive for as long as possible.
So as your first Omegathon challenge, yeah, thing that you saw, what did you,
yeah,
think?
Man, like, there's something... It's really like a sporting event because there's something so great about a group of people. And see, the thing is, the group of people watching this happen all are pretty proficient gamers, or at least familiar with how a first-person shooter deathmatch works.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Right away, you and I were looking at it and saying,
"Oh, well, she should flank right.
She should
now.
Flank,
yeah,
right."
Like,
or, "Oh my gosh, they don't have radar like in,
yeah,
Halo.
Yeah.
This changes the dynamics."
Yeah.
Or, you know, "Don't pick up the heavy gun." A lot of people were screaming, "Don't pick up the heavy artillery because,
yeah,
it slows you down."
Yeah. The first team, it was teams of four, the first team kicked so much ass.
It was epic.
I mean, there was times, and the thing is, like, it gets so tense because there's times where you know this person is one hit away, and, you know, there was a point where they were kind of trapped in this corridor, and this person was about one hit away from being killed, and there was a couple of huge aliens going to attack,
yeah,
them, and they just did this desperation thing. They threw a grenade in, switched to their pistol, started firing, ran up to one of the big guys,
yeah,
meleeed him to death, and ran past it before the grenade exploded,
yeah,
you know, killing all of the aliens that were doing it. It was the most exciting thing that happened. Yeah.
And naturally, the crowd just goes wild.
Yeah.
You know? And there's something about the Omegathon that just is, it's that touch of glory. It's that moment when everyone who says, you know, when are games going to get their big hit? When,
yeah,
are they going to get legitimate?
Yeah.
When you're in that room and you are full of adrenaline for,
yeah,
other people playing video games,
yeah,
that it just feels like this is it, man.
Yeah.
Like, we are enjoying something and sharing something that is unique, and we're having our own stories, and it's exciting, and you're like, why? I could watch this for hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if... You think about those guys in Korea and how much they play StarCraft,
yeah,
and video games on the television, and I wonder...
Maybe this could work.
Maybe this,
yeah,
could work, you know? Maybe,
yeah,
we have enough people where I would love to watch an hour-long match of a game, mm-hmm. especially if there's commentary. And there's not commentary today.
Yeah. Everyone was just kind of whispering to each other like, oh, you know, this is an indefensible position. There's three entry points. They'll never be able to stop off the entire horde. They'll need to split up, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's just a really cool situation because this is also one of those few it's one of the few points where like normal folks can kind of get this like mass moment of public glory.
Exactly.
You know, there's like 1,000 people watching them play this one game, and everyone's intently focused on it. It's just a great time. It's a really fun thing.
So amazing.
Yeah.
And one more thing to add, and yeah. it's along the same lines of that community being involved with mm. what's going on in a way that I don't think you see anywhere else. And the sense that we were so proud of the people who
played. Yeah, yeah.
Even the people who lost.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, there was so much cheer, and yeah. you felt nothing but honor for these mm. people. You know, I wanted to salute them and say, you went down doing your very best
at
a game, at a video game, and you earned it. You earned this praise, you know, and you and me, we share something, you know, and it's just that sense of camaraderie with people you've never met before is just, it's such an amazing feeling.
Yeah. And the second round that we were able to see, you know, we just came from this, was, again, as of yet unreleased, Beatles Rock Band was the second one, which is pretty sweet because not only, you know, is it even sillier than Halo because they're up there with Plastic Instruments and stuff, they actually put them on a stage. Like, there are literally, like, 1,000 people in there. And they're just belting out a Twist and Shout, and you know, trying their hardest to still look cool while these like blinding lights are in their eyes. There's thousands of people standing and, you know, jumping around in the crowd. It's just a great it's a great experience. I didn't really expect it to be as fun as it was. Like, I wasn't this kind of the Omegathon wasn't one of the things that I was most looking forward to, but now it's like quickly become one of the best parts of the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before we end, I remember one year, this was before Halo 3 came out, and in fact, it was before a lot of the footage for Halo 3 came out, and the final Omeganaut round.
The final Omeganauts always play an unknown game.
No one knows what it is.
Yeah.
And so this room was dark, right? Mm. Thousands of people. Mist comes on the stage, blue lights, and you hear Cortana's voice from Halo, and everyone just sighs with the satisfaction in the room, and you realize, not only are we excited to see what we're about to see, but we just have this love for this game and all the baggage that it comes with, and to be able to see it and to be able to see people compete in it and take something that we love so seriously.
Yeah.
But still have fun with it.
Like, everyone in the entire room is smiling during this whole thing because they're giddy and you know, they're excited and proud and kind of just incredulous at the same time. Like, is this really happening? Like, are we actually like cheering every time someone melees someone? You know, like, is this actually, are we actually like standing up and clapping after we see like a triple kill or something like that? Like, yeah, it is. And that's why everyone's just having a great time.
It's inspirational.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but more than anything else, that made me want to play more games. That made me want to play.
Walking out, I was like, I mean, going into that, I was like, Halo ODST, what a dumb name. I would never play, like, and like walking out of that thing, I'm like, all right, I'm buying an Xbox. Like, you know? So anyway, that was great. We're looking forward to the third day because that's when all the Omegathon stuff wraps up. And it's the final few panels, too. So we'll be back with our final thoughts. And until next time.
Yeah, until next time. See ya, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Have fun.
Bye-bye.